anxieties that we feel when we know we have disobeyed the rules. It also gives us a certain realization of sins of omission, in which we are in trouble because we have failed to accept the responsibilities of life. In working further with this, the Buddhist, of course, holds strongly to a meditative concept. Buddhism was originally a moral and ethical system, and it was gradually expanded to become what has been called in Asia the Ha Doctrine. It is the doctrine that the final solution to all things is compassion, that the individual must base his foundations upon a gentle release from the tendencies to cruelty of any kind. The Bodhisattva doctrine is the doctrine of infinite self-sacrifice for the common good. It is the doctrine of the individual forgetting his own advancements in the service of humanity. It is completely non-competitive. Competition becomes a basis of delusion, for competition itself is a delusion. Nothing will ever be solved by it, because it is constantly destroying the basic friendships, the basic kinships which should exist in human society. Intuition, therefore, comes mostly to those who by nature have chosen to follow a faith or a spiritual path of growth. These people, for example, do develop a strong sense of faith. Faith is dependency upon truth. It may be also called a dependency upon God, because in the highest analysis, God is truth. But it is the individual aligning himself with the divine purpose, striving sincerely to keep those spiritual realities which are set forth in the Sermon on the Mount and in the many wonderful teachings of the Christian religion. Here we have something that is contrary to human attitudes, but unfortunately for man, is in perfect accord with the laws of existence. And we are told in the words of the Masters that blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. God's meek are those who quietly and gently accept the universal plan. They are the ones who strive definitely every day to keep the rules, fully aware that in those instances the rules will keep them. Quieting down, taking the humble spot, waiting quietly for the good that is deserved, these people quickly ripen their intuitions. They become very wise in the inner life of things. In olden days, there was in every family an honored elder. Very often it was grandmother, sometimes grandfather, or an aged maiden aunt. But there was always someone in the family who was the counselor. And when problems became difficult or situations were hard to bear, the elder was called upon to advise, to tell, to explain, to speak from the experience of long years that which is best in the present emergency. In man's compound constitution, this elder is the coordinator. It is that which speaks with the wisdom of ages against the foolishness of the moment and points out those great strengths upon which survival depends. In our present generation, we have lost contact with most of the securities of the past. we have lost our ability to simply listen to the wisdom of the elders. The American Indian listens to the words of the olds and the truths. We listen mostly to superficial remarks made by those seldom qualified to speak at all. In other words, we have lost the counselor. We have lost the old teacher. We have lost Gunamans in the story of Parsifal. We have lost the guide that would take us through the underworld of uncertainty, as in the story of Dante being led by Virgil through the underworld. We have lost the leadership and guidance of counsel. We are depending entirely now upon the contemporary pressure of events, and we regard anything that is not immediate as out of focus. We are not able to benefit even by the lessons of our own country. We are not able to benefit by the unhappiness in the lives of our own parents. We go on the same way. We cannot recognize that the parent in us, the old aunt and the grandmother in us, speaking with the wisdom of years, is the coordinator. It is that which, out of the facts of living, distills the pattern which each individual must follow. From this coordinator, the person can learn how he must change himself. He learns how he can expand and develop the potentials that he possesses. He learns how he can be more useful and serviceable to the causes of others around him. He learns better habits of living. He finds the mistake of decadent morality. He learns many, many things. Not from old grandmother or grandfather, but from this ancient one within himself, the teacher, the wise one, the oracle, that mysterious power which, if it can be brought into our objective attention, has the answers to everything that we need to know. This is true on every level, social, individual, collective. For in this computerizing process, the individual is stripped of all of his superficial embellishments. He is stripped of all the various attitudes. He is forced in himself to see himself, to know himself, and to act in accordance with the needs of himself. There is no concealment possible. There is no evasion. The facts are all there. But there are not too many who are able to face these facts. And there are not too many that even want to know that they exist. We want to go on our own way. Every civilization and culture of the world has brought forth its prophets. The prophets of the Old Testament, the patriarchs, the apostles, the world teachers, the great reformers, the great leaders. These persons were actually outstanding examples of the possibility of bringing the coordinator into objective manifestation. Wherever these prophets spoke, in the Bible, we are told that they spoke upon the authority of God. The authority of God is the authority of truth. And the authority of truth arises from the individual's achievement of a basic factual existence within himself. Truth is, for each person, the truth of himself. The truth for every civilization is merely the statement of the laws governing that civilization and the inevitable consequences of action, constructive and destructive. The prophets of the scriptures warned the kings and the princes of the fall of their empires. They warned individuals of the sorrows and miseries of their personal corruptions. And many times these prophets were heavily punished by those who did not want to know the truth. And in ourselves, when an unhappy or unpleasant truth presents itself, we are apt to punish it rather than ourselves. We do not want to face these things. But until we face them, we cannot develop and perfect the instrument which we possess. This body is a magnificent instrument. It is far greater than we even suspect with all our researches and all our studies. It is something that man will never be able to equal by mechanical means. No matter how far he advances computerization, he can never achieve what is achieved within the person himself. For this computer in us is alive. It is not something that is merely machines and tapes and mathematical formulas. It is a living computerization of action. It is a living, constant expression of all of the needs and requirements of the person. It makes possible for him the complete reestablishment of his own life. But he has to call upon it. And many mystics, in their meditations, like Behme or Eckhart, these mystics felt that God spoke to them, that in some mysterious way the Holy Spirit descended upon them. The Holy Spirit and this mysterious inner voice, this mysterious power which gave an accuracy to every thought and made every statement a revelation, was actually derived from this computerization process within human consciousness itself. This does not mean that God is not in the business. It means that actually this whole computerization process is a divine process. It is a process not based upon materialism, but upon the exploration of the spiritual potential of the human being. Another factor that may help the average person to be more intuitive is the Pythagorean discipline of retrospection. Here at the end of each day, the person sits down and studies his own day. He analyzes and examines every single thing that had any meaning whatever in his procedures. He is especially mindful of his own reactions to the various challenges of the day. Was he annoyed by the phone call? Was he disturbed by the visitor who dropped in? Was he unable to stand the prattle of the children? Did he have one or more problems that he had been wanting to take care of and he was interrupted? And in each case, what was his reaction? Did he accept these things, or did he resent them? Did he resent them because they interfered with the common good, or because they interfered with what he wanted to do? Were these objects of resentment worthy of resentment? Were they things he should have accepted and understood? Did they ruffle him to the expenditure of vital energy, so that he wasted life as well as time? Was he able to quietly and peacefully move through confusions, through dissonances? Was he able to keep the truths of life very bright under the small irritations which are apt to disturb us? If he finds himself to be brittle, sharp, if he finds himself to be inclined to nag or to escape, and if caught in a mistake to try and deny it, or still further caught to try to prove that the mistake was right, all these things represent attitudes of the mind. And these attitudes are detrimental to the achievement of an intuitive understanding of life. Unless the channels are kept open to that which is better than we are, we will remain as we are. and that is not good enough. So we can watch these little details every day and begin quietly correcting the weaknesses in ourselves. Did we have a splurge of extravagance that we shouldn't have splurged? Did we buy things that were useless? Did we allow vanity to involve us in debt? All of these things are recorded in the coordinator. There is not one single detail of attitude that is not the effect of a cause and the cause of an effect. And that which we do in a moment of indecision or indiscretion, we must face in the future. Reduce, therefore, as far as possible, all attitudes which are inconsistent with peace of mind, inconsistent with integrity. If it is necessary to defend a principle, we will defend it to the end. But if we try merely to defend an opinion, we may all be in trouble. So we gradually move the foundation of life from the passing effects of the moment to the solid foundations of principles. Principles must operate. They must guide us and direct us. As we gradually relax away from wasting energy and time in purposes and circumstances that are meaningless, we can quiet down some of this restless spirit that perturbs us all. We can be quiet. We can weigh all things. We can be like an honest judge upon the bench, whose decision is to be based upon truth only and upon true evidence, and never upon gossip, hearsay, or unsupported claims. If we can sit in quiet judgment of our own lives, not that we wish to mete out a terrible punishment upon ourselves, but rather we want to know ourselves as we really are, and upon that basis, to improve ourselves in every way possible. As we become more thoughtful, we know that true thoughtfulness gradually ties in with the mental coordinator. The more thoughtful we become, the more the coordinator works in our daily life. When we get rid of thoughtlessness, then the true type of thought can begin to operate. And the mental coordinator will enable us to plan our lives to the very end at any moment that we wish to do so. It can also show us why we are, where we are, and what we are today. It can gradually move us from a career of accidents to a career of purposed endeavors. Because as this coordinator operates, a light shines inside of us. It is this light within which truly breaks through to become what we would term intuition. It is the light of the truth in ourselves, garnered from the experiences of ourselves, regenerated by the dedications of ourselves. These are the factors that make it possible for the individual to have the experience of truth. Truth being the basic factor in the experience of intuition. Intuition is the revelation of the thing as it is, not the thing as we wish it was, or hope it will be, or afraid it can possibly become. All this is part of illusion, but intuition is a light of certainty arising from the most perfect processes of computerization that the individual can imagine, far beyond. But it is all in the substance of life itself. It is not made of steel. It is not worked by a current passed through it. It is our part of our own eternal living organism. The mind is still the greatest mystery that man must face, because in all of his thinking, he thinks away from himself and not towards the source of thinking in himself. He is unaware of how to build gradually mental competence. He has experiences, but he misjudges them. He goes through critical situations, but blames others for them. He faces general social disorders but cannot mend his own defects. All these things block intuition, block clear vision of any kind. And under this benightedness, he drifts with the current of things from one disaster to another. If we can bring the coordinator into focus, we will discover that we are better people than we have ever known ourselves to be. We are also wiser. Ignorance is on the surface of things. Wisdom is innate. The illusions of matter annoy the five senses, but the sixth sensory coordinator cannot be deceived by them. The realities are always available within the individual. He cannot be finally taught entirely from the outside. He gains valuable evidence, but this evidence, passing through consciousness, makes itself available to him as a great code of conduct, a way of life, which leads to life everlasting. The mental coordinator, giving us this testimony, ensures us of the final achievement of any constructive end which we hope to attain. This coordinator goes with us. This coordinator will direct us in the infinite future as it directed us in the past. And gradually, the power of this coordinator is made manifest through its consequences. We have people around us sometimes that through a lifetime of association, we have really learned to trust. There are people whom we know to be good. There are people whose every action and every conviction is worthy of our respect. These kind of people, to a certain degree, represent the powers or factors within ourselves. Our own inner imagination, our own inner emotions are essentially good. Our own natural thought processes are good, and they are reasonable. But because of lack of discrimination and discipline, we are not able to follow the dictates of true thinking. We use the mind as an instrument of selfishness, when it should be the instrument of enlightenment. But the good friend in ourselves, the coordinator, is never going to cease to be a good friend. It will be a better friend life after life as we learn more about the laws of living. It will be with us until its work is completed. It will be a kind of guardian angel over us throughout all our existences. It is that thing within ourselves which cannot be destroyed, which cannot be perverted, which cannot be indefinitely ignored. Little by little, the inner takes victory over the external. Gradually, the sensory perceptions become the instruments to bear witness to the integrity of life, whereas now they principally reveal to us the inconsistencies of mortal activity. So the coordinator goes on to be with us until finally we develop an internal life in which the intuition of reality becomes part of our nature. Instead of being a faculty submerged, it will become gradually the guiding and dominating law of our existence, because the coordinator will finally take over. And in so doing, we'll make it virtually impossible for the individual to make any very serious mistake. But in the meantime, while he is struggling, he is torn between his own moral integrities and the immoral society in which he lives. And each person has to kind of work this out for himself. He has to find his own values and stay with them. And the beginning of this is honesty, because until he is honest, he will not choose that which is honest. As long as he believes in compromise, he will compromise. But the coordinator is constantly bringing him evidence that compromise is fatal, that he cannot win by anything except integrity. The only way he can abide in the grace of God is by obeying the will of God. And this will is represented through the laws of existence. If we keep these laws, then we worship correctly. It is not what we name the deity, but how we live according to its principles that becomes the vital and important factor. If then we want to really learn, if we want to try to develop this intuition, then we should devote at least some time, perhaps, to good reading, to study of those kind of texts which inspire us to live better lives. Not a type of text that has compromise built into it. Not a text which will cause us to assume that we are independent of the absolute responsibility of life. It should never read evasion literature of how to get out of doing what is right, or how to allow self-will to build a fortune for us. This is not the type, but serious and thoughtful things, things that inspire us more strongly, meditatively, to the expression of our integrities. One of the principles of the ancient oracles of Greece was that the gods always spoke in verse. Prose was the language of mortals, poetry the language of the immortals. And many very great works in poetry have tremendous moral and spiritual qualities. For in some mysterious way, poets are more often given to intuition than those in other more intellectual or scientific fields of endeavor. Poetry is a very good source of inspirational insights. Then, in our daily contact, we must try as much as we can to keep all of those rules which we are taught to be indispensable. And one of the great rules is that the individual should avoid luxury. He should avoid things which bind him to the earth. He should avoid the process of building up a standard of living when he should be trying to build a standard of life. He should be moderate in all things. He should be interested in the common good. He should be neighborly and friendly. He should try to hold the confidence of his children. He should do everything possible in his own way to help others to live according to a code of personal integrity. By setting an example of this and by sharing this wisdom with others, the individual also discovers that the more he gives of wisdom, the more he has. In giving good counsel, the individual, in forgetting himself, often releases intuition. I have noticed on many occasions that an individual, comparatively uninformed, when asked to help, to advise a person in deep trouble, a very humble person will give advice that the greatest philosopher could not equal. Because in the state of very simple service and affection and friendship, we release ourselves from the tyranny of these personal attitudes. And when we are trying to help another, we probably help ourselves most of all, but we do not even know it. And we could not probably live what we have advised the other person to do. And this is one reason why we have to watch the coordinator. Because the moment we advise an individual to a certain course of life, we must ask ourselves whether or not we need the same advice. And if we do need it, perhaps it has come to us through this intuitional flash when we try to help someone else. Watch the intuitional releases as they come along. Whenever you feel a very definite sense that something is wrong, try to find out why. Try to find out what testimonies bear upon this matter. Do not blame other people, because we are all subject to law. And when another person breaks the law, that is his problem. When we break it, it is ours. When we both break it, it is war. And this has been our problem for many ages. So we try always, in simple, quiet, meditational ways, to visualize the integrities of life. We sense within our own depths this power that is forever building upon our experience. If that was not true, what good would the experience be? What value would life have unless it was a record of growing? In some mysterious way, everything that happens has to happen to bring about the most necessary improvements of living creatures. If it was not for this, what value could we place upon anything? Why be born? Why grow and suffer? Why age and die? If it has no meaning except in terms of this little shadow in which we live. That out in space and everywhere else, there is nothing but some vast blind force moving. And this blind force pushes us and pulls us from one inconsistency into another. Such a life is inconceivable. Such a plan could not be implied as arising in a divine being. If the Lord of it all is all-wise, all-knowing, and all-good, then the plan must be for the greater good. There is a reason for everything that happens. And that reason is to help us to grow. And the moment something happens, we must try to understand by quiet thoughtfulness how this is going to help us to grow, how it is going to bring us nearer to the full purpose for which we were created. If we can quietly contemplate this in peace, and without any evasions or excuses, and try to understand prayerfully and in mystical contemplation the reason for that one little incident that happened today, we may find in that instant, the flash of intuition. We will suddenly know why it happened. Then the sky will close again. Plotinus, the great mystic, said that only on two occasions did he receive the direct impression of his God. This direct impression was a revelation of character. It was instruction as to what to do and how to do it. And it was, in this sense of the word, a clear expression of the intuitional power. So when we need intuition, we will have it. If we have it a little already, it will grow. But to make it grow, we must listen to it. We must obey its counsel. We must verify that it is really intuition and not simply self-interest masquerading under a spiritual appearance. We must test the spirits. We must try to find out and observe whether the things we intuit actually come to pass. If they do, and very often they will, then we must become more and more dependent upon that mood, that quality of life, which opens the link between ourselves and the record of our greater selves. In other words, we must go back into the stacks and find the records. We must go back into the mental coordinator, and we'll finally discover through this what is next for us, and how it is best that we can gain the desired end. Actually, intuition is only the availability of all that we have been through, all that we have experienced, all that we have thought, and every deed we have performed. All this together makes a pattern. And this pattern gives us the most valuable of all advice, what we must do next. How all that has gone before is being culminated now. And that every facility, faculty, and power that we possess is being focused upon the next problem that each of us must face. And if we begin to understand that, and are very careful in our daily conduct to cater to that type of intuition which invites us to be bigger than we are in spirit and in quality and in conduct. If the intuition impels us to grow, it is good. If it attempts to tell us how to escape growth, then we must suspect that the mind has taken over and that the frontal thinking is obscuring the basic fact. That the frontal thinking deals with things of today. The computer in ourselves deals in terms of forever. In that computer, the incidents of the day are simply part of the great collective experience which we call life. And in this computerizing process, all that we have been is available to help us to become better today. And that all we achieve today will be available to us in the future as we go along the path of life. Adversity very often strengthens intuition. Suffering and sorrow remind us that we have to find a reason for them. And after a while, we can no longer blame them upon society. We can no longer blame them upon friends and enemies. We have to come face to face with the fact that our life is the result of the degree of inner insight that we are able to focus upon the issues of the present day. More and more, as we grow in that dimension of feeling, as we become more conscious of this process, our intuition will enlarge accordingly. And we will find that intuition, the growth of it, is merely the revelation of it. It is merely that which is coming through, making available to us what we must know next in order to grow according to the archetypal pattern by which we were created. Intuition is a very wonderful thing, but it is a reward. It is a fruit. It is the harvest of the individual's dedications, his achievements, his longings, his yearnings, and his desire to understand his true place in the divine plan of things. And when he achieves to this, he will find that this intuitive faculty, like the old teacher, will be more and more available and will assist him constantly in the fulfillment of himself. Because actually, this old teacher is also himself. It is the submerged part that he no longer remembers. But sometime, everything that has been secret shall be made known, and everything that is hidden shall come to light. And when we realize that and gain the understanding of it, then we realize that the intuitive power will ultimately reveal to us all that is our real selves. Well, folks, I think that's all for this morning.